Blog Talk Radio.
Employees have the training and standards to realize their potential as committed workers
And they can do that on a large-scale, cost-efficient basis. And they have a petition here. It says, sign the petition we've launched with our partner, Daily Cost, to NFL owners and NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, demand the end of the referee lockout. Regular referees are reliable because they're highly trained professionals, a necessity to be a union referee. They're a high-profile example of thousands of other professions whose work we rely on every day to get the job done and who are trained by their unions. The labor movement is the largest workforce trainer of any adult outside the U.S. military. Need some examples? Remember Captain Sully and the Miracle on the Hudson? He was a huge safety advocate through his union, serving as the airline pilot's representative during a National Transportation Safety Board investigation and as a local air safety chairman. How about the rebuilding of the World Trade Center? The people who are thousands of feet in the air are union members as well as veterans. The AFL-CIO Building and Construction Trades Department training program, Helmets to Hard Hats, works across the country to train veterans for high-skilled construction projects, including those at the World Trade Center. Ever see a construction worker hanging off a bridge while making essential repairs and wonder what it takes to do a job like that? Read more about the Iron Workers Training Program. That's part of a labor-management collaboration. The president of a Chicago-based construction company who works with union workers says this about his experience. Here's what training center means to me. We're getting the highest caliber craftsmen in the business. It's going toward productivity and attitude. Even Mitt Romney recognized the value of unions before he was against them. In 2002, after the Olympics, he had this to say about the electrical workers' members. We thought it was going to take 3 weekends with 20 people. Instead, it took 20 weekends with several hundred people. And the work was done by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They worked up there. They put on the snowshoes. They treaded up there to help us. Union members bring huge value to our communities and our lives every day. Scott Walker and others who would do well to remember that the next time they treat union members, firefighters, teachers, and auto workers differently than union referees who are cut from the same cloth. So that's an important thing to think about. That was quite a good article. I enjoyed that.
I mean, for some reason, these guys seem to forget, right, that the union refs.
That's right.
And they forget the NFL is a players' union.
Yeah.
Know, and they forget that all of these things are needed because that they.
That's what keeps us rolling and going as a country.
Right. And gives them and gives them rights and gives them training and gives them protection that they wouldn't have. You know.
Well, thinking about jobs, here's a little something on. Let's bring jobs back to America. Let's see what this person has to say. Here's what that other...
I take pride into going to work every day. I have health care. You know, I don't have to go on public assistance. I'm able to afford a home. I'm able to give my son the best doctors.
Two kids. I have an older son who is 13 and a little girl who is 9. I have more time as a family with them now. You know, it's 8 hours. I'm 10 minutes from home. I be more active as far as cheerleading, Girl Scouts, football, baseball. I'm more involved in a lot of that now. And with having the security of the call center, I don't have to worry about losing my job. I have vacation. I have health insurance if they get sick.
I was out of work for 2.5 years.
I didn't know where anything was coming from.
I've been in telecommunications for almost 20 years now. The opportunity came, I was real excited about it because I got a chance to be back where I wanted to be.
And be working and have something more stable at this point, wonderful.
Because AT&T has brought jobs back, other things are coming about now. We're having a lot more retail, And so we're having more retail sales. More retail stores are opening up. I work for U.S. Airways. U.S. Airways is an American company. We want to keep all of our jobs here in America because that's what we deserve.
You know, what more can you say about jobs where that you get to hear thank you every day? And especially when someone's saying thank you for being an American.
Support the United States Call Center Workers and Consumer Protection Act. There's a picture of Obama there. I don't know whether he's going to talk at all. No? Just a picture. Okay, that was from YouTube. Having a stable job, and this here's a bright idea. Let's bring jobs back to America. Having a stable job can completely change your life. Communication Workers of America just released a new YouTube video, which you heard. InSource. Excuse me. Pardon me. I'm sorry. Featuring recently hired workers whose lives improve because they have call center jobs. The Communications Workers of America negotiated agreements with AT&T and U.S. Airways that brought jobs back to the United States. And when, if you go on this site, you can watch this video and read more about call center workers and the Consumer Protection Act.
This one really kind of bothered me when I read
which
it.
Which one was that, Leo?
Romney gets the wheel. Transit system headed for a wreck. It bothered me because this explains what they're planning to, what Romney is trying to do. Romney Ryan wanted to do to the to public transit. He says Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan may be spending a lot of time on bus tours between now and the election day, but their proposals for the nation's transit system would leave millions waiting for a ride.
Oh, boy.
A new website, RomneyWrecksTheBus.com, from the AFL-CIO Transportation Trades Department, outlines just how ugly a wreck Romney proposed 46% cut in federal transit funding would cause.
Oh, my. 46%?
Yeah, he wants to call 45%.
What about people who don't have cars or who are handicapped that depend on public transit?
On the site, you will learn how a Romney administration would ruin essential public transit services through reckless budget cuts, risky restructuring proposals, and how Romney would sell off our transit network to private companies that are now looking to make a buck.
Probably one that he's invested in.
I'm sure.
Or Paul Ryan's mother.
Yeah. The result, says TTD President Edward Wittgenstein, means everyone else can walk. And we know that the terms infrastructure and efficient transportation systems do not generate the same passion as other issues being debated in the presidential election. But anyone who works in the transit industry needs to know the facts. A total of 500,000 transit and other transportation jobs would be cut in the first year under the Romney-Ryan transportation budget cut. Romney and Ryan are serial privatizers and outsourcers who want to eliminate public sector bargaining rights. And I'm going to go to this, I want to see this Romney wrecks the bus
video?
No, it's actually a website that tells what's going on.
It's an interesting website.
Yeah, it says Governor Mitt Romney is no friend of transit workers and riders. If you have a bargaining rights in the public sector, he's declared war on you. President Obama has proposed the largest investment in public transit in history as proposed transit privatization and has publicly supported workers against nonstop Republican attacks on bargaining rights. Take a look. Tell your coworkers, friends, and families in the most important vote. That says, wrong way to get rich, stars transit systems and jobs.
Get a speak up, Liz.
Okay. Yeah, let's go to this one. Romney Ryan plan demonizes government transit as social engineering. Yeah, Romney-Ryan budget would slash federal transit funding by 46% and abolish funding for new transit services while cutting taxes for millionaires. That's for real.
Oh,
right. The House Committee on the Budget, Democratic amendments to the Republican 215 budget resolution. Okay, this is where it's coming from. They actually have it in the budget resolution. And Ryan voted to end all new public transit investment. And in year one, we cut 500,000 transit and transportation jobs. I mean, these are the kind of people you want to elect for crying out loud.
I mean, I don't know how anybody earning under $1 million a year could vote for these people.
I don't know. I don't know. Even making $1 million a year.
Not enough to keep up with the kind of cuts they want.
No,
you'd have to be able to helicopter in and out of your house to your job.
And attacks on the public sector. Romney endorses stripping collective bargaining rights from transit workers, firefighters, and teachers. As governor, Romney gambled with private sector pensions. As governor, Romney saddled Massachusetts transit riders and workers with a $2.7 billion maintenance backlog. As governor, Romney opposed extending OSHA protections to the public sector. Imagine that.
Remember, he was only a one-term governor, and he almost wrecked the transit system.
Yeah, Massachusetts. And outsourcing. Whatever they can't cut in public transit, they will outsource to the lowest bidder.
Their friends.
Yeah. As Governor Romney vetoed bill banning foreign outsourcing of Massachusetts taxpayer-funded jobs, as set $7.1 million worth of public sector jobs to India. Imagine that.
Wow.
Yeah, Romney takes tax breaks for outsourcers who send 800,000 jobs abroad.
That's when he says he's creating new jobs.
Yeah.
Well, you know where he's creating them, not in this country.
No.
He didn't say he was creating them here. He just said he was creating jobs.
Here's an interesting thing, too. It says, Romney's record at Bain. Now, you can get all this from that website. Like I said, Romney wrecks the bus. Romney's record at Bain. Bankrupt companies. AMPED, $5 million Bain investment. $100 million pulled in dividends. GS Industries. $60 million Bain investment, $65 million pulled in dividends.
State International.
Yeah. $450 million Bain investment, $421 million borrowed under Bain. DDI Corp. $46.3 million Bain investment, $10 million for management fees, $85.5 million profit by Bain.
So they doubled their money.
Yeah, they sold these companies. And or bankrupted them. They're bankrupt, actually.
Yeah, they bankrupted.
They bankrupted these companies. Okay, $5 million Bain investment, $100 million in stock offerings, Stage Stores. Detail Inc., $46 million Bain investment, $93 million made in stocks.
385 jobs got... does this go across this way?
No, I think it keeps going. It goes down.
385 jobs cut and 392 million held in debt by it should have been read across. AMPED. You missed this. With AMPED, who had 5 million Bain investment, 100 million pulled in dividends, they cut 385 jobs and 392 million held in debt by 1999, and they filed for bankruptcy in 2000. For GS Industries, which was a $60 million Bain investment, and then they pulled in $65 million in dividends, they laid off 750 workers, and then they had bankruptcy in 2001. Date International, Leo read the figures for that. They fired 2,000 workers and filed for bankruptcy in 2002.
Yeah, after what they did, $421 million they borrowed, all right, against that company.
Yeah. DDI Corporation, They laid off 2,100 workers and filed for bankruptcy in 2003, and Bain made a profit. They put in $46 million. They made $85 million, so they doubled their money, but they bankrupted the company and laid off 2,000 people.
Yep.
Stage Stores, they filed for bankruptcy in 2000, and they only put in $5 million, got $100 million back in stock offerings.
Unbelievable.
In details, they filed for bankruptcy in 2003, and they doubled their money there, too.
Put in $46 million and got out $93 million and then filed for bankruptcy. So these guys are what they call
vultures.
Vulture capitalists.
Horrible.
They destroyed the company, destroyed their pensions, destroyed everything.
And destroyed people's lives.
Yep.
How many people was that? Let's add up the number of people.
Well, let's see.
Just for ha-ha.
Well, 385 jobs, 750 jobs.
So that's
2,000 jobs, 2,100. So that's a little over 5,000 jobs that they destroyed, companies they destroyed.
Over 5,000. And how many jobs has he ever created?
Tax and Public Union Buster in Chief. Union Buster in Chief. Let's see, long way to get him. I already read that. That's how they got rich. Union Buster in Chief. It is critical that we stand with the Wisconsin GOP, said Mitt Romney in February 25th, 2011. I support Governor Cassius' effort to restrict collective bargaining in Ohio. I've taken on union bosses before. I'm happy to take them on again. These are all quotes from Romney. I would use the bully pulpit of the presidency to encourage more states to adopt right-to-work laws. And called strengthening labor laws an attack on American entrepreneurialism, on the American workplace, and on the American worker.
Let me read this. No, don't do that. Governor Mitt Romney is no friend of transit workers and riders. President Obama proposed the largest transit investment in modern history in the Department of Transportation. Invested $8.4 billion in transit in his economic recovery plan. I think it's very important to have public transportation.
Yeah.
Championed transit operating flexibility to slow service and job cuts. Fought Republican proposals to gut mass transit accounts. Abolished Bush-era transit privatization policies, yay. Included Section 13C, transit workers' bargaining rights in all transportation investments. While Ryan voted to end security funding for Greyhound and others, Obama cracked down on unsafe, low-wage bus companies. Condemned Governor Walker's action to strip public sector bargaining rights as an assault on unions.
Well, he's got that right.
Yep.
Yeah. I have so many disagreements with his policies.
I disagree with a lot of his.
There's a lot of
foreign policy. There's certain areas of domestic policy, but he's strongly backing unions, which I think is the backbone of this country.
Yeah. I guess what scares me, so much about with a guy like Ryan Romney is that. They're diametrically opposed. I mean, if you have any values whatsoever, if the liberal values, Romney and Ryan are not.
I mean, their objective is to put everybody out of work.
Exactly. We're going to make 12 million jobs in 4 years. That's bullshit. How's he going to do that?
Knows
how to bankrupt everything and make money.
Well, they're not going to be sending them to China because China has a hard time now.
Yeah, yeah.
The new place to be sending things is Africa.
He wants to create 12 million new jobs, but he doesn't say where.
That's right.
Which I found was interesting.
Didn't say he was creating them here, and he hasn't had a history of creating them.
He talks like a globalist. He's a major globalist, like they all are, but, you can't trust the damn thing the guy says. And that's what's killing him in the polls.
His track record is diametrically opposed to anything that he says.
He does exactly another thing. He says another thing, says something totally opposite the next day. I mean, it's just like...
Well, he's trying to appeal to the Tea Party conservatives, and then he's trying to get more votes.
Yeah.
Well, from somewhere. I don't know where he's going to get them.
He says, tell us what you think. What was wrong with the U.S. economy before the crash of 2008? I thought this was fun because, you know, what the Republican, it's kind of a play on what Clinton said, you know. Like, the Republicans had it, crashed it, destroyed it, right? Tried to take 4 years to rebuild it. Oh, you can't do it. I want it back.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like, but this article is interesting, and what it says is, what was wrong with the U.S. economy before the crash of 2008? This is the third of a four-part series describing what went wrong with America's economy, how to fix it. I can promptly go to part one.
Yeah.
And it says, come and tell us what you think. If we want to fix what's wrong with our economy, we can't just return to the way things were before the crash of 2008. We have to fix what was wrong before the crash. And what was that? In short, it was the failure of our low-wage economic strategy for the past 30 years, which crippled the growth engine of the U.S. economy. Right? And I'm going to go to part one, because it's a good idea to start at part one.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Can you find it?
Part one before. Yeah. It's by Kelly Ross. The Real Scoop, What's Wrong with the U.S. Economy. This is the first of a three-part series describing what went wrong with America and how to fix it. Part two is later. Please, it says the Great Recession officially ended more than 3 years ago.
Oh, really?
Well, accordingly, yeah. Which was what? 2009. Yeah. But working families know there's still something wrong with the U.S. economy. If we want to fix our economy, we first have to understand what's wrong with it. And there's a chart on this that shows it. And starting today in a series of four posts and infographics, we'll spell out what we see as the short-term and long-term causes of our economic problems, and we'll point to specific solutions. Part one gives the obvious short answer. We still haven't finished cleaning up from the crash of 2008. Part two gives the long answer. The U.S. economy was broken long before the crash of 2008, but its weakness was temporarily papered over by a real estate bubble in the Bush years. And part three explains why the U.S. economy was so weak before 2008. The failure of the low-wage economy strategy in the U.S. had pursued for three decades. Part four sets out an agenda to fix what's wrong with our economy, replacing the low-wage economic strategy of the last 30 years with a high-wage strategy for shared prosperity. What's wrong with the U.S. economy? Short answer, what is wrong with the U.S. economy is it's still recovering from a crash of the late. This may sound obvious, but it hasn't stopped some people from pretending our problem began after President Obama was inaugurated in January 2009.
Yeah.
The recession President Obama inherited in 2009 was no ordinary recession. It was triggered by a collapse of an $8 trillion housing bubble. Construction in the housing sector kept the U.S. economy on life support during the Bush years, but this life support was withdrawn almost overnight. In addition, with the collapse of the home prices and pension wealth, more than $12 trillion of household wealth was sucked out of the U.S. economy. 2008, so families had to cut back on spending, especially families that had borrowed heavily during the bubble years. $12 trillion
Wow.
Right, household spent well. The cutback in spending was like hammering on the brakes, and it caused the largest increase in unemployment since the Great Depression. President Obama's stimulus bill set stopped the free fall, but it wasn't really big enough to fill a hole of more than 10 million jobs or to make the unemployment rate bounce back from its 2009 low. Even today, mortgage debt is still a drag on the recovery as households slowly repair their balance sheets. As many as a third of our mortgages are for more than the underlying property is worth.
Mm.
So more than a third.
Yeah, are underwater.
Yeah, so.
You want to pull up because you're so far back, you know, people aren't going to hear you. Excuse me, I just wanted Leo to pull up so he could be heard.
Finally, years of high unemployment have depressed worker wages, so they have barely been keeping up with inflation. The income of typical middle-class families has declined since the official end of the Great Recession.
Mm.
As a result of these factors, middle-class buying power remains too weak to fuel the kind of robust growth we need to lift our economy out of the massive hole it fell into in 2007. So, we're stuck in a vicious cycle. The consumers don't spend enough. Businesses don't know whether they'll have buyers for their products. So they hesitate to invest and hire. So unemployment stays high. Consumer spending stays weak. How do we break out of this cycle? We need to restructure underwater mortgages to get underwater homeowners spending again. And unless Congress passes more job legislation to put millions of people back to work, it may be years before unemployment comes back down to where it was before the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Republicans in Congress have obstructed every attempt to clean up the mess that President Bush left behind. They rejected President Obama's American Jobs Act of 2011, which would have created millions of jobs and avoided the kind of layoffs at the state and local level that have hobbled the daily recovery. And in short, we have unfinished business cleaning up the mess from 2008, but there was something fundamentally wrong with the U.S. economy long before the crash of 2008, and it too must be fixed. This will be the subject of our next three posts.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, then we can get to that next week when we are back to.
Should I take a little music break?
Yeah, I would.
This is an excellent site, folks. You really ought to go to it. AFL-CIO blog.
Which guy
is that?
Todd Atkin. Okay. Missouri Senator Todd Atkin couldn't have selected a better title for his campaign travels with Phyllis Schlafly. He's the one that justifiable rape.
Oh.
Remember this video?
Yes, I do.
He's touring with Phyllis Schlafly.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to read this? It's not that long.
Okay, I'll read it. I'll give a go at it, and then we'll go to a break after that. So, I mean, really. Missouri Senate candidate Todd Atkin could have selected a better title for his campaign travels.
Oh, Ryan's best friend, by the way.
With Phyllis Schlafly and other prominent extreme conservatives than a common sense bus tour. A more appropriate title, according to Missouri activists, would have been Atkin's Nonsense Tour. After all, what politician other than Mitt Romney has made so many statements recently that defy common sense? His legitimate rape comment is just one example of his common sense nonsense. Todd Atkin said that he doesn't like Social Security, that he doesn't think there should be a minimum wage at all, that student loans are a stage 3 cancer at the heart of liberalism is a hatred for God. Just the other day, footage was released of Todd Atkin telling a man that the way to get a member of Congress to listen is to write a decent check. As the common sense nonsense tour kicked off yesterday in St. Louis, more than 50 women's health activists, union members, retirees, and students protested outside for the second day in a row. There were as many or more protesters outside at an Atkin event than supporters inside. Among the chants echoing through the hotel while Atkin and Schlafly gave their remarks were, "Atkin is mistaken about baby making. and Wrong for Workers, Wrong for Missouri. David Meinel, a longtime member of the Machinists and president of Missouri Alliance for Retired Americans, attended the event and talked with reporters about Aiken's support for the Romney-Ryan plan to wreck Medicare with a voucher plan that gives seniors coupons to pay for medical care, said Meinel. Every senior in Missouri needs to know the truth about Todd Aiken. Despite calls from the national GOP leaders, the deadline passed today for Todd Aiken to drop out of the race for the Missouri Senate, and he's made it clear that he's not going anywhere. It is up to the voters of Missouri to send him home this November. The common sense nonsense tour continues to cross the state through Friday. Oh, my God.
Well, it's obvious somebody's paying his way.
Yeah, you know? Somebody's supporting that.
So maybe it's either he's either a cokehead, you know, or he's a...
Koch brothers, that's what
Koch
they all mean by that.
And, it's just, or somebody. Somebody's back in his...
He's a disgrace.
And for maybe Shapley's group, you know.
Oh, who knows?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a bunch of...
It's amazing
losers.
The loose screws that come out of the woodwork to support people like that.
Good God.
You just wonder, you know.
Yeah, it's frightening.
It really is frightening that anybody could support someone like that.
Well, there we go. So, anyway, we'll be right back after this.
Little music break for your enjoyment.
A little occasion. All you can eat. Never recovered during the 2001 to 2007 recovery. By virtue virtually every measure, the economic expansion of 2001 to 2007 was the weakest on record since World War II. The Bush expansion ranked dead last in terms of growth in wages and salaries, and employee compensation, including benefits and jobs, employment rate, business investment, and GDP. It was the first and only expansion on record in which the employment rate actually declined. But if the U.S. economy was so unsound during the Bush years, why didn't more people notice cracks in the foundation? The answer is the fundamental weakness of the economy was papered over temporarily by the bubble in the real estate crisis for both residential and commercial real estate. By 2006, housing prices had risen 70% above their historical trend level and creating more than $8 trillion in phantom bubble wealth. It should have been obvious to everyone that this was a speculative bubble. The bubble allowed families to maintain standards of living by borrowing against the value of their homes and going deeper into debt. But this was not a sustainable situation. As wages and family income stagnated, household debt rose from $7 trillion to $14 trillion between 2001 and 2007, as highest share of economy since 1929. Wow. And we're in a 1929 economy right now.
Oh, we are?
Yeah. And families, that's when the big crash happened. And families could not keep increasing their debt loads forever, and housing prices could not keep soaring indefinitely. Sooner or later, something had to give, and the bubble had to burst. The Bush economy was a house of cards waiting to collapse. Yet if the real estate bubble masked the fundamental weakness of the Bush economy, the question still remains, why was the U.S. economy so weak in the first place? And this is the subject of our next post.
That's one, yes, what I'd like to know, why it was so weak in the first place.
Yeah.
And I will read that one, part three.
Okay, if we can find part three.
If we can get to part three, that's what I'd like to know. That's an interesting thing. Please. Is it because that's when they began to have the divide between the middle class and the super rich, and salaries didn't
keep pace,
and jobs were sent overseas?
It's
the beginning of the fair, what they call the fair trade, where there was an exodus of jobs.
I think you might be right there on that.
And super capitalists like Mitt Romney from Bain Capital is one of the people that sent this country into a tailspin. Did you find part three? Leo's looking for part three. I'm just curious what they thought.
Actually, no.
He's looking. Maybe they haven't published it yet.
They may have published it yet. Maybe coming out tomorrow. Yeah, what's today? Today's the 26th?
Yeah.
Okay. This one was from the 27th. Okay, it says see part three tomorrow. I'm trying to find part three, so I'm not setting it.
He's looking.
Part three would be today. Okay, this is the third of the four parts.
Okay.
Oh, it wasn't even four parts. There was only three parts.
Three parts, right.
It says, may I fix it? See part four tomorrow, so they added one more, I guess.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll read this one. Okay. Now, this is part three. This is the third of a four-part series describing what went wrong with the American economy. Part four tomorrow. And let's see. If we want to fix what's wrong with our economy, we just can't return to the way things were before the crash of 2008. We have to fix what was wrong before the crash. And what was that? In short, it was the failure of our low-wage economic strategy. Yeah, that's what I thought. The past 30 years, which crippled the growth engine of the U.S. economy. The first step of the low-wage strategy was a sustained war against workers' freedom to bargain collectively with employers, beginning in the late 1970s. The percentage of workers covered by a union contract fell from 27% in 1979 to 13% in 2011.
Well, they couldn't sustain an economy. They couldn't sustain them, and then they outsourced all the jobs.
The second step of this strategy was the relocation of U.S. manufacturing production to countries with lower wages and environmental standards from which goods would be shipped back to the U.S. The new system of globalized low-wage production was made possible by pro-corporate trade deals and a strong dollar policy that gave a price advantage to imports over goods made in America. It resulted in a perennial trade deficit since the 1980s, the loss of millions of good middle-class jobs that paid well, and the hollowing out of the U.S. manufacturing sector. The third step was Wall Street's takeover of the real economy. Beginning in the 1980s, financial firms focused on making a quick buck by stripping assets from existing businesses, downsizing their workforces, cutting wages, and outsourcing production. Between 1960 and 2008, the manufacturing sector's share of the economy shrank by half, while the financial sector's share of the economy doubled. Now, that's what Mitt Romney did.
That's exactly what Daniel Capital was
about. So he was part of the destruction of our economy.
Yeah.
So would you vote for someone who caused the destruction of the economy?
And what's going to happen? If he got in office, he would destroy the economy completely.
But what's left of it? The economic strategy depressed wages in multiple ways. The war against unions undermined wages for union and non-union workers alike. So did perennial trade deficits. The explosion of leveraged buyouts on Wall Street rewarded businesses for underpaying their workers and overpaying their executives. Other strategies to suppress wages included allowing the minimum wage to lose its value and the obsession with fighting inflation at the expense of full employment. The end result of this strategy was that wages became delinked from productivity growth. Nearly two-thirds of the income gains after 1979 were captured by the top 10%, and the concentration of income at the top reached levels not seen since the Great Depression. This low-wage economic strategy crippled the growth engine of the U.S. economy. Rising economic inequality was harmful to the dynamism of the economy. Trade deficits acted as a chronic strain on the U.S. economic strength. The new system of globalized production diverted productive investment from domestic manufacturing to overseas, and Wall Street firms increasingly failed to perform their core function of channeling savings to productive investment in the real economy, hindering economic growth and productivity. Economic inequality also created the political conditions that made possible wasteful tax cuts for rich people, which did a lousy job of creating jobs but diverted resources away from economically productive public investment in education, clean energy, and infrastructure. The failure of this low-wage economic strategy was responsible for the unusual weakness of the U.S. economy before the crash of 2008. If we want to repair the growth engine of our economy, we will need a different economic strategy. This will be the subject of our next post. Okay, we'll look at that. Certainly have it for next week.
Oh, so, yeah.
I think that's very true. That's what I would have guessed.
I think it's important that people understand that this is what happened.
That this was a plan.
Yeah, I mean,
it didn't just happen by accident, folks.
It started under Reagan, and then it just kept going. Yeah.
Well, they had a plan. That's what they planned to do. They planned to take all the money at the top and bankrupt the rest of us.
Yeah.
That was a plan. It didn't happen by accident.
No, it didn't. Nothing like that happened by accident. I think it was...
We have about 10 minutes left, Leo. It's 40:50. Do you have some other news that might be of interest to
people?
Yeah, we're going to go off the AFL-CIO website. There's some other world news that's in states nation news that's interesting, too.
Yeah, there's something here that...
I wonder how many of our listeners have been adversely affected by what, you know, the economy and the...
I don't know how many people there are, but, you know, that are out there tonight, but...
I know that we've been affected. You know, they just... Everybody is. The high prices, the low wages, and... it's just hard for everybody to make ends meet. I talk to a lot of people all day long.
This one I found on Yahoo the other day, and I've seen it here. And I thought this was a fascinating thing, and it was something to attend. A man's failing heart healed itself on the day of the emergency transplant.
How did that happen?
Yeah, I read this the other day, and I went, God, you know, that's amazing. A miraculous thing happened the day Michael Crowe was set to receive a potentially life-saving heart transplant. Doctors had determined the surgery would be ineffective, but his heart suddenly started beating again. Crowe, a 23-year-old pharmacy student from Omaha, had been diagnosed with acute myocarditis, or inflammation of the heart muscle, likely caused by a viral infection. When his mother brought him to the emergency room at his local hospital on August 14th, doctors found his heart was only functioning at about 25% efficiency. The hospital referred him to the Nebraska Medical Center, and by the time he was admitted to the intensive care unit there, his heart effectively had dropped below 10%.
Wow.
If he had come to us any later, his heart would have just stopped, Dr. John Hunt, director of heart transplantation of Nebraska said. Well, doctors hooked Crowe up to a heart-lung machine that would essentially act as his heart for him, pumping blood throughout his heart, his body. Then, when the heart stops, that defines as clinical death, Dr. Hump said. And in this case, his body only stayed alive because the machine was pumping his blood for him. Crowe was immediately placed on a list for an emergency heart transplant and remained on the lung cancer machine, on the heart lung machine, in a medically induced coma until an appropriate donor heart came available. Well, after nearly 3 weeks, the heart was found. The good news was followed by bad, though. Tests revealed he had contracted a blood infection. The doctor said he probably would not survive the transplant surgery.
Aww.
About an hour later, one of the doctors noticed something strange. His blood pressure was going up. Something that would be impossible if his body was only receiving blood through the machine. And his heart started working again on its own. Dr. Hunt told ABC, the left side of his heart was pumping blood again. The right side was still weak, so we slowly eased him off the machine. At this point, he was in pretty good shape. Dr. Hunt said that was the first time one of his patients had been on an external heart-lung machine for this long, where his heart started beating again. And he's home now, doing great, Dr. Hum said, and he's really, really lucky. Hum said doctors seem to be seeing more cases similar to this, in which a failing heart heals itself.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. The interesting thing is that if he had gotten the transplant right away, we would have never known if he could have recovered on his own, Hum said. Now that we have technology that allows people to remain on external heart machines longer, we could see this more. In the simplest terms, Dr. Allen explained that the heart got sick, triggering an immune response that shut the heart down to fight the infection and eventually healed itself. Technology kept Crowe's body alive while his heart healed. And although there could be effects on his heart in the future, Dr. Allen said young people who suffer from acute heart problems like Crowe tend to make a full recovery.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's such great
news. Isn't that something? Holy crap. Jeez. No, I thought that was amazing when I read it.
It's good news, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've made such advancements in medicine that enabled something good like that to happen. That's great.
Yeah.
doctors too, looking out for him.
All right, now here's something that just a warning before we go tonight. It says the top 10 breakfast cereals most likely to contain Monsanto's GMO corn.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is by Natural News. I'll let Red Lila be part of this too. By now, nearly everyone interested in healthy living is aware of the recent research linking Monsanto's GMO corn to cancer tumors and an increased risk of premature death in both men and women. News of the research is spreading like wildfire across the net, and support for Proposition 37, which seeks to label GMO foods in GMOs and foods, is growing by the day. But the media has not yet reported on the everyday foods being sold in grocery stores right now and made with Monsanto genetically modified corn, which foods are most likely to contain GM corn. To answer the question, I visited a local grocery store in Austin, Texas, and purchased 10 breakfast cereals made with high levels of non-organic corn. According to the Center for Food Safety, up to 85% of the corn grown in the United States is genetically modified. Really, my God. This means corn-based cereals that use non-organic corn have a very high likelihood of containing GM corn. The following list presents the most 10 popular breakfast cereals most likely to contain Monsanto's genetically modified corn. For the record, none of these cereals claim to be GMO-free, nor made with organic corn. The exact GMO content of these cereals remains a mystery precisely because manufacturers of these cereals refuse to label them with their GMO content. And the lack of clear disclosure by the food industry underscores the urgent need for labeling so that consumers can make an informed decision. Right? So here, Lila is going to read off the, in no way can we find these cereals could cause cancer tumors. Okay, there's a legal note here. But it doesn't say that they can cause cancer. It says those studies have not yet been done. GMO corn is an experimental crop with unknown long-term effects of human. Breakfast cereals made with GMO corn may turn out to pose a significant long-term threat to human health, but that has not been determined. The article is presented in the public interest, reflecting reasonable caution over common food ingredients, which French scientists have now convincingly linked to cancer, premature death studies conducted on rats.
The top 10. Here we are. The top 10 cereals most likely to contain Monsanto's GM corn: Cocoa Puffs and Corn Chex, Frosted Flakes and Honey. I used to love Frosted Flakes and Honey Graham O's. Honey Nut Chex and Kashi Heart to Heart, Kellogg's Corn Flakes and Kellogg's Corn Pop, Kix and Barbara's Bakery Puffin Peanut Butter. Which cereals contain no GMOs? Nature's Path. There is only one brand of cereal I know that's 100% non-GMO and 100% organic across the entire product line. That company is Nature's Path. If you buy breakfast cereal and you don't want to eat Monsanto's GMO corn, always choose cereals from Nature's Path. That is my number one most highly trusted cereal company. Many natural brands that appear to be healthful and natural are actually not organic or GMO-free. For example, Barbara's Bakery cereals are not organic, although they are positioned in store shelves alongside other organic cereals. They are actually made with conventional crops grown with pesticides, which may include Monsanto's Roundup. You may also notice that most of the cereals most likely to contain GM corn are children's cereals. It is the children in America who are being fed the most GMOs. This represents a highly unethical food experiment being conducted on an entire generation and the long-term effects of human consumption of GMOs are simply not known. What we do know is that rats fed this very same Monsanto GM corn developed shockingly large cancer tumors. The photo released by the French, this is awful. You can look at them online. Oh, terrible tumors. So don't feed your kids that. And we're right to the end of our time.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you for listening. And I hope if you're interested, you check the AFL-CIO website.
Yes.
And you check the website, was it Trainwreck?
Trainwreck.
Carwreck.
Carwreck.
On Mitt Romney. The blog.
Bus wreck. Romney Ryan transit cutting public transit budget by 46%.
Yeah.
Devastate the country. Wreck it. So, you know, these guys are hacks. These guys are criminals. These guys are incompetent. These guys are crooks. And it's obvious they want to do it to the rest of the world.
They want to suck everything out of it.
I have to say, anybody right now who has any faith in those two birds, got to be out of your mind. Got to be a traitor to your country, and you got to definitely be a traitor to the American working class. So, adios, amigos.
All right, talk to you soon.
We'll see you later. But I'm sure that all of our listeners are normal, good,
intelligent
people, and will definitely.
That's why they listen.
Stay clear of Romney. Oh God. Anyway, good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
Talk to you tomorrow.